Angie for breakfast.
All right. If you've joined us, I think it's fair to say that you're looking for some information around the voice referendum. It is a compulsory referendum for people over the age of 18 in Australia to vote on the 14th of October or at early polling places. And I have been on quite a journey with this. And obviously, you know me from the radio, from living in the Southwest for a little while. And in the studio with me as well to go on this voice journey of learning together is Max Jetta.
There you go.
People might know you from football. Mm. Also, you worked for the city of Bunbury. Yep. You work at the hospital now. How else would you describe you?
Probably all-around good bloke.
If you may say so yourself.
Yeah.
And so Max and I crossed paths a couple of years ago now, and it's sort of, you know, haven't spent a whole pile of time together, but, you know, oh, I met you at the Reconciliation Walk a couple of years ago. That's really where I sort of met you. And then, you know, follow each other on social media because it's 2023 and that's what you do, and just a sense of you and, you know about your love for footy in the Southwest and you to be a strong voice in the community for reconciliation and for, you know, Aboriginal people. And from there, oh, we've had all sorts of chats, and it was a little while ago now, Reconciliation Week.
Yeah.
And we had a big chat on air that was really quite powerful.
Mm. Yeah. Still touchy topic as well, I think, today. So, yeah, no, I'm just grateful to be here and share my thoughts and what I think is, yeah, it could be impactful for not only myself but the whole community.
Mm. And when I asked Max to come in, to come back in, because we talked on air with Reconciliation Week and we did a longer form podcast as well, and like lots of people, I got a lot of feedback on it that was really positive about, you know, you just talking about your experiences in life and sort of making it real for people. And I think that was really powerful. So I thought, why don't you and I, we're leaving the politics at the door. Like, I'm not a political nuffy. You're not. We don't know. Like, how old are you?
Well, I'll be 30 this year.
30 this year. All right. So I'm 34.
Yeah.
And since we've been voting, I mean, how many prime ministers have we seen come in and go out, and we don't know who's in and who's what? Like, that's been our life in politics. Yeah. And so we're not all about that. So we thought, let's have a you and me chat about our lives and learning about what this voice is, because it's stirred up a lot for a lot of people.
Yeah, it has.
And when you came in for that reconciliation chat, we did talk off air also about the voice, and I said, oh, you know, the date hadn't set, I hadn't looked into anything, I didn't know anything about it, but I did say, Max, like, do you know what you're doing? And you said,
No, not really, but at the moment I thought I had my own voice. So, I was like, I'm okay. I'll just vote no. I've got my own voice. I can talk if I want to. But, now this happens, a lot of things has changed.
I came into it with, like, just big question marks, really. And I think it's only through this I've realised actually how naive or a level of ignorance that I have had, not necessarily willfully, but just because of the life that I've lived and, you know, where I was born and who I was born to and all the rest of it. I just didn't know a lot of stuff. So there's been lots of learning. Where's your journey taken you?
Oh, it's taken me probably, on a long journey, just listening to a lot of people on their thoughts and trying to almost connect my roles and my values to them people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where my journey was first. I've had a chat to family and was like, no, we've got our own voice, we should vote no. Like, but when we realised what the question was at the end of the day, was to be recognised in the Constitution, and that's what all of us want as all Aboriginal people, I think, at the end of the day, is that we just want to be recognised. And that's a part of our reconciliation journey as well, to be recognised and educate each other on a journey, not only for our lifetime, but the next lifetimes and the next generations after us, to be a better place for everyone to live in and to be closer and almost have the voices one. And that's, I think that's where a lot of people are getting mixed up. Yeah.
And isn't this such a weird conversation for like two people, similar age, you know, froth the Southwest, you know, love it. Like we're sitting down having this conversation and you're saying what you want in this life is to be recognised.
Mm.
And it's hard if you haven't had that lived experience to understand why you and I have had to have this conversation.
Yeah.
Like it shouldn't really be a conversation that we have to have.
No.
But you did bring up the question. I did a few things. So after I heard from you and you were like saying no, because you didn't know who was going to talk for your family and you felt like you already had a voice,
yep.
I was like, oh, I need to learn more.
Mm.
And so I've spoken to other mates, Indigenous, non-Indigenous, people from ECU, like a quite a wide spectrum of people. I had a big conversation with a guy called Steve Lewin, who is the chairperson for Carrie Carrick Aboriginal Organisation, who has explained a lot to me and I've learnt so much.
Mm.
And I also went to a voice seminar at ECU that was held by Professor Marcia Langton, Order of Australia. She says it quite clearly in her words, as somebody that has been part of the working group for the referendum for over 10 years, what are we actually talking about? And this is what she said.
The voice will be, or would be, if Australians vote yes, an advisory committee with no funding powers, no veto powers, no other powers but to give advice to the Parliament and government on matters that affect Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. It takes nothing away from anybody else, but it enables Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who are elected by their communities to give advice on how we can, for instance, close the gap on the terrible health statistics in our communities.
And I kind of love the fact, Max, that when we started the conversation, you were like, oh, I feel like I have a voice.
Mm.
I think that's awesome. Can you speak a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think it's for myself as a who I am as a probably individual. I think I've had to be a voice for not only myself, but my father. He's never had that voice in the community. So I think I said in our chat is he's been pushed away. He's gotten told to, you know, just shut up and sit in the corner.
Pastor Jetta, isn't it?
No, that's Peter.
Oh.
Yeah, and my dad's, yeah. But yeah, same generation, brothers, so only years apart, but like same thing. And I think that's why, yeah, I thought like, no, I've got this, you know, like I can, and I'm only one person, only young as well, but I think I thought, I got my own voice. I'm pretty big in the Southwest, and with footy, I use footy to the highest platform that I can. So like I said, we got through and we've met through football,
yep.
And that's how I thought, no, I've got enough voice. I've got a loud voice as well when I need it. And then, yeah, and that was my first opinion when I first came out. I was like, a voice, like, no, I don't need a voice.
Okay, which was cool. And I actually kind of really like that because it says that we're a little bit different in the Southwest perhaps than to other parts of Australia, which is actually like two thumbs up for everyone, right?
Yeah.
That's sick. And then something that I know that people are asking a lot about is what it will mean if we have a voice, and then people are talking about treaty and all sorts. And did you know a lot about this space?
No, not about what the voice is.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I had a chat recently, is that I've did a little bit more listening and research on it. Like at work, I sit down and just hear all these conversations about the no side, really, because I want to think like, do I want to be on that side and do I want to vote no and do I really want to confirm? And
if that's the people that you're hanging out with at the moment or sitting around, what are they saying?
Yeah, well, they have no clue. So
so they've taken the no campaigns line. If you don't know, vote no.
Yeah. And I was like, no, I cannot. Like, I've been taught a lot of things in school, you know, like, yeah, understand what you're talking about. So recently in the city of Bunbury, worked like, why? That's what they asked me every time I rocked up to work. Like, why are you here? What do you want to do? Why? And every decision I had to make was why? Why did I make it? So, and then I thought, you know, I'm going to use that for why? Why am I voting no? And then I did some research, so I found out, and yeah, now my opinion's changed because I'm like, no, I want to make change. I want to be better for, like I said, not only for myself but for future generations. Is being comfortable in our own country, really, and standing up. And like I said, a lot of people are voting no because they don't know what it is, or it's just the easier way, you know, like at the end of the day, people don't want to see change.
Change is hard. Yeah. Like, change is hard and scary for so many of us. And it's understandable to have that fear of change because we're like, well, what's it going to be? And that was where I was at because I was like, well, if we're doing a change and now there's so many people getting hot under the collar and, you know, it's got very angry and very aggressive and there's this like real mean undertone that's come to the conversation. I thought, okay, well, I need to learn more because there's a lot that I feel like I'm missing.
Same.
And so I spoke to just a friend who I met through a sick event. It was so cool. So there was a group of directors and actors and stuff that have dubbed over Fist of Fury.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so they've dubbed it over in Noongar and it's called Noongar Da. And I was like, that's sick. And I went and I'd never seen Kung Fu movies and it was like, it's hilarious and the overacting and everything. And it was in Noongar. And so it was really special. It's the first time it's ever been done with an Indigenous language in Australia. Anyone's. And it's, you know, it's the one from here. And anyway, I went to that and I met this lady. And I always feel awful, like what I've done with you being like, hey, Max, can you come in? Can we talk about it? Because I'm like, the responsibility is on so few shoulders to provide some of this education. And I feel really awkward about it because I don't know how else to do it. But it requires me leaning on you, which sucks.
No, it's all right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you're trying to say. Yeah.
So anyway, I messaged my friend and she like didn't want to talk publicly, which is absolutely fine, and just said, hey, who should I be reaching out to talk about this locally? Because I'm a local voice, right? So she gave me a list of Aboriginal corporations and I reached out to them all and Carrie Carrick Aboriginal Corporation got back to me. And I didn't, to be honest, even know that these crew existed. And then I also found out about the Nalakala Budja Aboriginal Corporation. And so if you're like me and we didn't know about these things, then the Nalakala Budja region and Aboriginal Corporation refers to Noongar language of the Yanniyang, Wilman, and east of the Nalakala Budja region is the Baladong region, and then south is the Waggle Kayap region. And it encompasses lots of the southwest towns like Capel, Donnybrook, Balingup, Wickapin, Narrogin, Williams, Mundajong. Obviously, we're out in the wheat belt now. Quinana, Brookton, Pinjelly, Wagen, Harvey, Collie, Pinjarra, Mandra, and Boddington. So that's the area that one's talking about. And then the Carrie Carrick Aboriginal Corporation is for the southwest Budjar region. And it's like Wadandi, Bibbulmun, Pibbulmun, Noongar language groups, and kind of covers from Busselton, like down through Augusta, Bridgetown, and Nanup, and Manjimup, and that area.
Yeah.
So I ended up contacting them and saying, hey, who could I talk to about it? And then I had half an hour phone call conversation with the chairman, Steve Lewin. And from there, I was like, I need to record some of this, and then I'm going to have to figure out what to do with the audio because I was just learning a lot. You obviously knew about these corporations, did you?
Yeah.
And this is, again, one of the things of like we're coming from two different places. These corporations have been a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Nalakala Budja has just been established this year, I think.
So this hasn't been in my periphery, which, again, makes me feel stupid and ignorant, but lucky I like asking loads of questions. And so I spoke to Steve, and at this stage I was like, well, my friend Max is voting no. And then I spoke to the chairman, and he went straight into it with this.
Straight up front, my position is yes. You know, I want to see First Nations Australians, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders recognised in the Constitution. To me, it's as important as the Noongar settlement and the recognition the WA Parliament has given to Noongar people in the southwest. And yes, there's a whole lot of decisions to be made after the referendum, but that is not what the referendum is about. The referendum is about a yes or no to whether Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders should be recognised in the Constitution. I think if it doesn't happen, well, I don't really want to think about that, but, you know, we'd be a pariah amongst nations around the world. I think it had caused more friction within Australia and set us back in terms of reconciliation. And you know, it's the right thing to do. You know, Aboriginal Torres Strait Islanders have been here for 65,000 years. We managed our country sustainably and lived here in harmony with the, you know, the environment. We are and still practice customary and cultural activities on much of our country. It's just the right thing to do. And it will, you know, set us up as a community of Australians, not just Indigenous people, but, you know, a multinational community that we are, for a good future.
So I heard that, and then I'm like, oh, but my friend Max is no, and then who am I? Some white tart being like, well, Max, sorry, I'm not going to listen to you, and, like, this is starting to change my opinion. That was a hard thought. But then obviously you've been kind of on a similar journey.
Yeah.
From a different perspective.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that I needed to know more about, that of course, is the native title settlement for the Southwest, and you're all across this.
Yeah, so I think it was a couple of years ago, we had a big voting down here and everyone put their hands up.
So you were part of the vote?
Yeah.
The decision-making process?
Yeah, it happened at the Italian Club.
That's the best Southwest, like, thing ever.
Yeah, it was a lot of families brought in from a lot of the Bunbury area. From then I was quite young. I think I just graduated school and I was like, what's this about? So I asked my parents and that, and they're like, oh, this is about, you know, what's going to happen in the Southwest. You know, like, we're going to get some of the land back from our reserves and Crown land. And I was like, oh, that'd be cool. Like, and then, I literally live straight across from a reserve. So I feel pretty honoured. I was like, oh, wow, like, you know, we get to, like, I'm watching it, looking after it, you know, anything. So sometimes I go there, take some rubbish out that people leave in there. I think that's the one thing that I really cherished. And I was grateful to be there and be a part of and have a vote. And it was only just yes or no and pretty simple. Everyone, yeah, just said yes. Like,
yeah.
And then we get a lot of positive feedback and, opportunities for myself and a few of my mates now that are doing some work in the Bunbury Outer Ring Road. And I think that's sort of connecting through, you know, helping young Indigenous people get employment, finding hopefully houses down. I know it's pretty hard now to find houses, but, you know, they've got some sort of support around themselves with the income and that. So, which is really supportive, and it's starting to get a bit more bigger now with Ngarlakaala Budja being a part of it now. And when I was a part of the city of Bunbury, that's what we was waiting for, is like, once this is up, we can start to do real big impactive stuff with around consultation and how to do it correctly with Aboriginal people in the whole Southwest with the Aboriginal Land and Sea Council.
This is so, like, life changing.
Yeah.
And I think most of us, white Australians, I don't know, like, do we have to do the PC thing? I don't even know. White Australia? I remember seeing it in a headline, but without really any concept of any depth or detail.
Mm.
And so then again, because I've been ignorant in this space, I had to ask Steve, who's the chairman of this organisation, who's been part of doing it, like negotiating it and coming up with it for like a decade. He's been so involved in so many levels. And so I had to ask him, all right, what does that mean?
Now, that package of benefits ranges from a significant sum of money to what I think is the most important part of the settlement is the recognition bill in Parliament that recognises Noongar people as the traditional custodians of southwest Western Australia. That is very important to me and very important to many of the elders. But it also extends to housing, joint management estate, cooperative management with DBCA of other lands, a land estate where we'll get across the southwest about 320,000 hectares of land back into the Noongar land estate, some of that land of which we will be able to develop and, you know, earn income off and work with hopefully partners and stakeholders in joint ventures for retirement villages, housing, and to commercial operations, you know, perhaps with Bunnings or the likes in shopping centres and so forth. So we can provide our membership, Noongar people, with an enduring outcome that gets them out of the disadvantage that we are currently in and puts them on a path to, you know, a reasonably well livelihoods into the future.
And then, of course, the first thing that comes to my mind is the things that everyone's been saying on social media or talking about, and especially with the confusion with the Aboriginal Cultural Heritage Act and the fear that went through communities and the confusion was, well, what land?
Mm.
Whose land?
Yeah.
And it was Crown land.
Mm.
So it's just unallocated land, superfluous to the government's needs. It's no privately owned land.
No.
Yeah.
Nothing. Yeah.
So if this agreement's already taken place and anyone in the Southwest is worried about the treaty element, well, then I learned that legally the Southwest is defined or known as being a treaty area. It was never called a treaty. It was just called the agreement. Is it weird for you to hear me be like, I didn't know?
No, I think it's a lot of things. So, like, we've kept a lot of politics undercover, really. You know, we do it very quietly, and it's just the way we do it. So, you know, if we have any talks, anything, we got a certain people that we go through to get answers from. Yeah, we don't, for me myself, I don't like causing any trouble with that. So I think same thing for them. Like, we didn't want to take land off anyone, you know, because that's what's been taken to us. So we don't like to do, you know, one eye for another. it's more about how to work together. And like I said, we're pretty adaptive people, and we just want to adapt with everyone. And yeah, ask anyone, we want to be one at the end of the day and work together. And if there is Crown land that we can use for, you know, housings for, you know, our elders that can go into, and I think, but at the end of the day, we don't really do that because we take them in, they look after us, we look after them at the end of the day. And I think that's where a lot of confusions happen, is that, oh, like, I'm going to lose this, I'm going to lose that. And I'm like, no, we've been through that in Southwest. You're not going to lose anything, mate.
we did that.
Yeah.
The other part to that question, and this makes me feel like a little bit ickier, because this has never been in my radar, but some people then come back with the, why are you getting something and I'm not?
Mm.
And then you kind of get that attitude. But then there's the whole history that I've slowly learned since being an adult about that, including when I got to the Southwest. I learned that during the wars and stuff, because Australia was at war against Italians and stuff, they got put in like prisoner of war camps.
Mm.
But then after the war and everything, people returning from war and were offered packages of land, because land is so valuable, and that gave that base platform to so many people to be able to work hard on their land and build something from the ground up, and now contribute so much to the fabric of the Southwest community. Mm-hmm. But it was the opposite for our Aboriginal mates. They served with us, weren't allowed in the RSLs or anything, weren't entitled to any of the soldier packages of land, and weren't allowed to get that start and have land ownership. And it kind of all stems from there after that, doesn't it?
Yeah, that wasn't even recognised.
Nah.
I think lately, I think RSL was starting to recognise, Aboriginal, people that went to World Wars and that. I have an uncle that was one of them, and I was like, I didn't know that. And he was like, well, yeah, we wasn't really talked about it. So, and he's never really got anything from it.
Why did he fight?
Oh, just for everyone. So, and for his people, because he's like, this is my land too. So,
and then just didn't want to say anything when he came back to be like, where's mine?
No. I think that's the thing. I think we don't want to start anything. We don't want to cause trouble. So, I think, he was like, no, I'll just go do my own thing then. And that's what we do as people. We just don't give us something. We'll try work something out. And that's what we did. You know, we didn't get land. So we worked something out. Mm. And, now we get some Crown land. It's taken many, many years to get some. But even for myself, like, it's just buying a house and getting land is, I'm like, gosh, I've done something that first in my immediate family has, is we actually have land. So, I can say, Mum and Dad, you can actually live here. Like, you don't have to move anywhere. You don't have to get pushed out from rentals or real estates or housings. You know, you got something. We have something here. So when I'm gone, we have a house, we have land. And, I just want to buy more. And that's the way we have to adapt, really, is buying our land back off them.
And that's just choked me right up, because you talk with such honesty and vulnerability, Matt. And like, that's, it's a hard thing for you to do. But like, I'm in the opposite situation. You know, like, I haven't been able to, you know, buy yet through my lifestyle choices and, you know, a whole bunch of factors. But my parents have, and I have that safety net in them, knowing that if anything ever comes up in my life, they'll be able to look after me.
Mm.
Whereas...
it's the opposite.
Yeah. And
yeah,
that's huge.
Mm. Yeah, I think literally my parents may have to move in with me in a couple of months. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's how real it is. Yeah, I'm living it at the moment. I only got 3x2, but got to try house, yeah, 5 other people. So, yeah, it's going to be difficult. But like I said, yeah, it's there. I'm living it right now. I'm putting a smile on my face. I don't want to cause any trouble. Don't want to tell anyone. But that's what I do myself. I stick it and I just go, I can run with it.
So we got a bit sidetracked here, I suppose, in terms of our like experiences and stuff. But I think it's all part of this big conversation. I think this is why I really wanted to sit down and talk to you.
Yeah.
And some of the other stuff that like has come up is about why is it going to be in the Constitution? Like, and one of the things you said to me when you said that you were going to vote no, which stuck with me and sort of informed a lot of the questions that I've been asking, because I was asking it with your reference in mind. And you had said to me, yeah, I want to be recognised, but putting this in the Constitution and making the voices a step too far. And so with that in my mind, I asked Steve about that and why the referendum is about putting it in the Constitution.
That came and went at the whims of the political party of the day. And, you know, that hasn't, since that has gone, nothing has been there to replace it. We don't have a representation, one organisation representation of Aboriginal people in Canberra or Torres Strait Islanders. And that is really problematic. You know, we know from various government studies, Productivity Commission and that when First Nations people are involved in making decisions about themselves or the country that is theirs, the outcomes are far better when they're not at the table.
And that's something people keep bringing up to me is like, what is the voice actually going to do?
Mm-hmm.
But from your experience with just the native title one, you've felt like you've got a voice. So obviously it does something.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I think that's the one thing that we've talked about quite a bit is that I think a lot of people are afraid of what it is, but it's just advice to the government. Like, at the end of the day, they make decision.
Mm.
Like anything in any law we put through in the Constitution, like we can recommend stuff, but at the end of the day, they have to decide it. And yeah, I think now, like I said, like thoughts have changed on when I did some research, and I didn't want to stick with the people that have voted no because of our values don't match up.
Mm. And I asked him to elaborate a little bit more about that idea of like why having an advisory body is so important.
When traditional owners are involved in decisions about them or their country, the outcomes are far better when they're not in the room. We have lots of examples of that from community development, health, well-being, policing, to biodiversity management. Just from a cost-benefit point of view, it saves us as taxpayers significant investment, significant money by having people making decisions about them, you know, how things are done with them when they're at the table.
And that's another big thing that's being, you know, bandied around and talked about is the cost of things and, you know, how much money the government spends on Aboriginal people.
Mm.
And there's lots of misinformation in that space. Like there's a $40 billion or $30 billion figure that gets thrown around, which is misrepresented, because a lot of the services that are involved in that are just for everyone, not specifically. And plus, if you look at like the stats on, all right, well, then that would mean every year the government spends $540 million on women or men. Like, you can split that up in so many ways, so it doesn't make a lot of sense. But when, it's just good advice passing through the channels, you are going to save heaps of money.
Yeah.
From a tax point of view. And I love that Steve just got all like businessman on me.
Yeah.
So, from a cost saving benefit. I wasn't expecting that. And then I guess as well, which came back to the reason why I asked a lot of the questions of the people that I did after your my chat was you said, well, who's going to speak for me and how does it work? And that's been a big one. People want the details.
Mm.
And how did you sort of make right with that?
It's more about who's speaking now from part of all Aboriginal people on the news and that. And I'm like, I think I'd rather have someone down here in the southwest that I know, and that's where I went back and did some research, is that, yeah, there is going to be someone from the southwest, but we can actually talk to them. I'm not sure how much, but because I'm such a big voice, I'm hoping they can come to me as well and ask me all these different type of questions. Because I always try to see both sides to every story that I've come across, and I think at the end of the day, like, I agree with yes, and I also see a lot of agreements with the no's, but like in a day, I think I want to vote for what's right for me and what I think, and that will be a yes. And I think the biggest thing I have to do now is try to influence other people to what my story is, and hopefully they can connect with it, just like me and you do a lot. Mm. Yeah, I just don't want people voting because they don't know what they're voting for, I don't know, I'll just vote no.
Like,
yeah.
And that's where I've come into this, because I felt weird that I even had a say in it, because it doesn't really feel like something that's really going to affect my life afterwards, apart from the fact that my friends and, you know, people that I consider family will be affected.
Mm.
But me personally, it feels weird that I kind of have a say in this on such a big level. So then I was like, well, if that's my responsibility, then regardless of black and white or wherever you've come from to be in Australia to be able to vote, we all have that responsibility to find out. And I felt very insulted when they said, if you don't know, vote no.
Yeah.
I felt like that was cheap. People are better than that. Mm. People want to be better than that.
Yeah.
So then that's when I started looking at it all. And then I really thought when we got back in to talk about it and talk about all the things we learned, I was going to have to sit here and be like, I'm sorry, Matt, because I'm going to vote yes, like from what I've learned. But in no way does that mean I have wanted to present this information to sway anybody. Mm. I think it was just more to have this lived Southwest experience of what it's been like going through the conversations of the referendum and so much confusion.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing that we might be able to help people is that we had two different views. And after I'd done some research, I've came around and I was like, I don't think that's the right decision.
And because we had a different view, I asked all the questions that I asked rather than just walking in blindly.
Yeah, and I went back and said, why? And like to myself. So I was like, yeah, I think that's one thing that we need, like this platform here, just asking people, like, check it. And like, it's not as scary as it is. It's not going to impact your life dramatically where you lose your house, land, like everything.
No chance.
Like, no, it's not going to happen like that. But yeah, it could be, like I said, as people, we just want to recognise. And at the end of the day, if that question was just by itself, I think, I would hope the whole Australia is like 99% or 100% like saying, yeah, put them in. And I think that's where the confusion is. Yeah.
And for me, one of the big things as well was like, you know, a lot of people are asking, how is it going to work? Who's going to be voted? Like, who's going to be on The Voice? How is that all going to happen? And then Steve pointed a lot of things out for me.
The question of yes or no is getting diluted and set to aside by all the questions that come after it, which, yes, they're important, but that is not the question we're being asked as a nation. The questions that come after it of who, how, when and where are all things that will be decided by our representatives. That's the politicians and parliamentarians we've elected, you know, to the Commonwealth Parliament and to the bureaucrats and advisors who craft legislation and so forth. And that'll all come after the question has been, you know, whether yes or no.
And when I went to that seminar with Professor Marcia Langton, she had been working in part of the working group for so long, and she was asked a lot about the details and things like that. And basically she said that you can Google this as well, Voice Co-Design Final Report, which was the recommendations that were put to the Morrison government, because it was the Morrison government, the Liberal government, that has come out and said they're going to do a no campaign. They actually engaged all of this to begin with. And then, yeah, so it was put to Parliament, and then it's moved through Parliament from there. So they initiated it. And if you Google Voice Co-Design Final Report, she said the recommendations are from pages 15 to 19, and they're only recommendations from their research, whereas it will all come down to the elected officials from Parliament, like just all of our MPs and all the rest of it. It'll have to pass through both houses on exactly the ins and outs of how it will work, and it'll take probably 18 months at least to figure it out.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's all to come. You know, this is just the mission statement or the intention, I guess.
Yeah.
So that really cleared things up for me too.
Mm.
Max, that was a big chat.
It's right.
Do you think less of me because I didn't know so much of this stuff?
No. I think you're just like everyone else. So, yeah, if it's not in front of you and it's not in your face, I don't think you're not going to read or talk about it. Yeah. Where now it's out there. So I encourage everyone to do what you do, is research and find out what's your vote like. It doesn't matter who's talking to you. Like, find it. Find out, do your research, and just go, all right, cool, like, we're not going to judge, like, if you vote yes or no. We just want to, we want you to vote on what you think is right at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. And I'm sorry we have to have this conversation,
to be honest,
but I'm glad that I have a friend that I could have it with.
Yeah. Yeah, no worries.